Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
I want to be great. I want to be a great artist. Like, I really want to be good. And I understand being good is like making more work, making it better, but then also practicing in public, right? Listen, there are not a ton of opportunities, really anywhere. It's hard to find them, and this feels very much like a resource-starved environment. And guess how people behave in resource-starved environments? Badly. They behave badly. I behave badly. Like, you know, everyone's done it. Like, I can't believe so-and-so got that thing. I can't believe so-and-so got that thing. It's ugly shit. And guess what? It happens. Everyone does it. Fiber Club has been, why it's been the surprise of my life, is because it actually is showing me that operating from a place of abundance and being a place where things can happen and connections can be made is the antidote to resource scarcity.
It is my true delight to welcome artist Katie Shulman to the podcast today. Katie is an artist, organizer, arts administrator, and educator from Washington, D.C. Katie holds an MFA in studio art from Syracuse University and a BFA in fine art from the Penny W. Stamp School at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. Her work has been shown nationally, including at the Everson Museum in Syracuse, New York, the Urban Glass Museum in Brooklyn, and the I.M. Weiss Gallery in Detroit, Michigan. In 2022, Katie founded Fiber Club, a network of artists and creative practitioners working in Southeast Michigan. Along with a monthly meeting, Fiber Club has organized two group shows for Detroit Month of Design and partnered with local organizations and institutions, including Buffalo Prescott, The Shepherd, and Michigan Medicine, to collaborate on arts programming and additional exhibitions. In addition to her art and organizing practices, Katie has an over 10-year career as an arts administrator, and she currently works in alumni relations for the Penny W. Stamp School of Art and Design. Katie lives with her partner and her freshly turned one-year-old baby in Detroit, Michigan. Katie, I'm so happy to have you today. Welcome.
Kaylin, I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
We are new friends and just hitting it off so well. Our background in arts organizing and community building is certainly a great point of connection, and I can't wait to talk about all of that. But I just wanted to, you know, throw in there that your baby turned one recently, and what a milestone. I know that has been a big thing for you the past couple weeks.
He turned one, and it's funny, Kaylin. It's like, and I felt this basically the past year, it's like everything is different and nothing is different at all. Mm. And it was a real sort of wake up moment for me to hit March 13th, 2025. Because that now, right? Like, I have another really important date in my life. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, right, this March 13th. Like, yeah, that's a new one. And we came to the next one. And I really, the week up until his first birthday, I was going back in my phone and looking at all the selfies, like basically naked selfies I'd taken of myself, like looking like I was about to pop.
Yes.
And then sort of being like, oh my God, like he was there. He was there the whole time.
Oh, that's so wild.
Yeah.
That's, I never thought about it that way, in that like the 1 year anniversary of giving birth, AKA your kid's first birthday, is like you're processing like this is a day now. Like I just, you know, because like the buildup to giving birth is so great, and you don't know exactly the day oftentimes. And yeah, it's so interesting. Like, I mean, I have three kids and all of their birthdays are in May. So sometimes I forget whose birthday is which day. My wedding anniversary is also in May. And so I'm just like, I don't know. Like, we're just throwing a big party all month.
That's so funny.
But I really like that. I mean, I do know my kids' birthdays.
No, sure. But right.
I have to think about it.
No. And before, you know, you had your first kid, like, May... Well, certainly now I'm knowing you guys really like to throw it all at the wall in May. That's great. But like, right, isn't it? And right, like March 13th had no meaning to me.
Yes.
For 35 years of my life.
Yeah. And who knew like that was going to be the day that.
Who knew? And, you know, it's interesting. And I've had to reflect quite a bit too, just on the birth story in general. And frankly, my birth story in becoming a mom has so significantly affected my studio work. But my baby was, he was breech. So I had a planned C-section.
Okay.
So it like, I know I've had so many friends who, you know, you don't exactly know when they're coming. And in a way, knowing exactly when he was coming was also kind of surreal. Like I went to, like I checked myself into the hospital.
And you're like, today I'm having a baby? Is that real?
Yeah, it was like, right. It was almost like, you know, could have said, like, imagine you're at the dentist and then you come out with like a living thing. It just, it was so banal. Like, that was so weird, right?
Yeah. There
was
like, we're just going to schedule this thing, bringing human life into the world.
Yes, literally. And it was just, right. You know, the story that I have been acculturated to is like you go into labor, maybe your water breaks, and literally I'm like, my husband drops me off at the front of the hospital. I like sign myself in.
He's like, I'm gonna go park the pickup, honey.
literally and I'm like, okay, do like, here I am. And then it was really
here I am to give life into the world.
Right. It's
today's
like
my day.
I came in with someone in my body and then you're telling me like they're going to be on the outside soon. It was really banal in like the strangest, truly, you know, special way. But yeah, so bizarre.
It's so fun to like think about it in that way. I hadn't really considered that. I didn't have planned C-sections, but all three of my births, I guess artificially broke my water because I was overdue with all of my kids. I was not, you know, so using a couple different methods, we, you know, tried to kickstart me into labor, like one, she literally used like a crochet hook and like,
you
stick it up there and pop the bubble and, you know.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So anyway, but I remember having this moment of speaking of having kids with close to the same birthday, my son and my daughter are one day apart.
Oh.
And I had this moment. She was overdue. So my oldest son and my daughter. So he's 4 years older than her. And she was overdue, and for like up until this one day, I guess it was like May 24th or May 23rd or something, I was like, they're going to have the same birthday. That's going to be so great. It's going to be so great. I just had these visions of like them having the same birthday. And then a few days before it was Finley's birthday, I was like, oh no, they're gonna have the same birthday. What was I thinking? That's like horrible. Like, we gotta get this moving, people. Like, we gotta
get the crochet hook. Get the crochet hook. Yeah, that's really funny.
I just panicked and was like, this baby cannot have the same birthday as my other baby because that day won't be, you know, and like,
right.
Of course, they could have had the same birthday and it would have been fine. But I just, you know, when you're that deep in like 39 weeks pregnant and you're just like, oh my God, 40 weeks, whatever it was. Anyway, Katie, Now that we're 10 minutes into this episode sharing birth stories, can you share something about your childhood that connects to your art life today?
Yeah. I kind of love that we spent 10 minutes talking about becoming parents, because I think a lot about the fact that my parents are lawyers.
Ooh, cool.
They,
DC I'm one lawyers?
Of four.
You grew up in DC, right?
I grew up right outside of DC.
Okay.
And it was so important to them that, like, I was exposed to art and music. Oh. And I mean,
the best.
Oh my gosh. And, you know, now thinking right about like how I'm going to do that with my son. I am an artist. So it's like, of course we're going to music class. Mm-hmm. I've tried to get him to like draw some stuff. It didn't go that well, but I still
You're
tried.
Like, you can't hold a pen, but let's right. figure this out. Yeah,
exactly. I was like, these Valentines aren't going to make themselves, buddy. But my parents were really so supportive and interested in like cracking open the world for me. Mm-hmm. So my childhood was like really, it was filled, mm-hmm. like filled to the brim, but so many doors were opened in terms of, you know, I took piano lessons, which for better or for worse, like mm-hmm. That wasn't the thing that stuck, but sort of any sort of interest, they're really supportive of any interest. And then, you know, not for nothing, I, as a high schooler, I was like, I want to go to art school. And mm-hmm. the answer was like, cool, ugh. Let's do it, which is staggering.
Yeah.
It's really staggering, you know, and I think I am, I mean, my practice and who I am and how I move through the world is totally, I'm like a yes oriented person. Mm-hmm. And I have to think like the seeds of yes were sown by parents who were also yes people. So I see that in my everyday life, in my studio practice, I was formed by yes people. And that is really, it's valuable, and it's something that like I really do try to practice every day, and I feel really lucky, right? Like,
yeah,
there has been a lot of difficulty in a lot of different ways, but I've never thought it's wrong to want this, you know, or like problematic or too much or too, because I was oriented around people who are like, does that sort of make your heartbeat fast? Like, go for it.
Mm. You're making me emotional because I'm just like, am I doing that for my kids? Mm-hmm. Like, I want to be a yes parent.
Mm-hmm.
Not in like a, you know, like, I don't know if you've seen that Yes Day movie, but like I don't want to be a yes parent in like, yes, you can have every toy that you ever want, or yes, you can, but yes, the world is your oyster.
Yes.
Let's explore it together, you know?
Oh, I think about that too, so much of like, actually, I wonder if I'm going to be a no parent in some ways, too. So another thing about having lawyers for parents, mm-hmm. like, you know, my mom has been a lawyer for the government, mm-hmm. like, basically my whole life. My mm-hmm. dad works for a private practice. I don't know if I have to tell you this, but, like, the earning potential of a lawyer, even if they work for the government, is a little bit different than an arts administrator.
What?
Yeah, I know. Oh, I'm sorry to tell you this now,
I am
Taylor.
Shocked to
yeah,
hear
I
this.
Know. I know. It's really shocking. And so something I've really thought of as a parent is, like, I actually don't think I can afford to be a yes parent in some mm-hmm. ways.
Yeah.
And like, how am I going to, right, be a yes parent in the world is your oyster way, mm-hmm. And make sure like abundance is felt.
Mm-hmm.
Even if there are going to be a lot of no's mm-hmm. just because of the path that I've chosen. And I don't think that's a problem, but also, I mean, you're just talking about a literal movie that was made. Like, what does our culture say to our children about, right. like,
what matters and right. what makes meaning. And in a different way than how I grew up. And frankly, I mean, we're in a generation where I think a lot of us are like, oh, the life I'm going to provide, while it might be super textured in a lot of different ways, like it's going to look different. I mean, I work Absolutely. At a university. I know how much it costs mm-hmm. to send a child out of state to the university I work at. Mm-hmm. I'm not understanding how like I would ever be able to do that for my child.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm not sure.
I'm with you. I think the something I think about a lot with this is to your point of like the yes and no parent, like it, you know, at some, you do have to make choices at some mm-hmm. point because mm-hmm. even, did you say you're one of four kids?
I'm one of four.
And having three kids, like something that I've been reflecting on in this season and honestly struggling with a little bit is, you know, I'm, my youngest is almost seven. So I'm fully past the like needy dependent stage that you're in with like a 1 year old. But I'm basically like a professional activities manager right now, you know?
You're a camp counselor. Yeah. You got like your support and yeah.
Because I have these three beings who are trying to figure out what they want from the world and who they are. And, you know, as an artist and a creative person, the way that I want them to be able to find wonderment and discovery is like through experiences, right? Mm-hmm. And through, but I also, to your point, like I don't have all the time and the money to like do everything that they express interest in. But I think one thing that, you know, we've really tried to do is identify like within our household, like what are our top priorities? And, you know, I think the way we spend our time and facilitating connection is really important. So I heard, I think this was maybe a Brené Brown something, but she was talking about this idea of how in this phase of parenting, all of these activities and things can actually pull you away, like separate you as a family. You know, you're not, they're not inviting connection. They're creating disconnection. And she talked about how when one member of the family, I think she has two kids, decides that they express interest in something, they have to make a decision as a family if that activity will benefit the family. Not just the individual, you know, you have to think about what it will cost everybody in the family for that one person to participate. And I know that kind of sounds heavy, but I actually think like we have honest conversations with my kids where, you know, I'm like, hey, bud, if you want to sign up for Lego Club, here's what that means for everybody else, you know, like, or that's another night of the week that we won't be just home having like family dinner and being able to go for a walk. Like we try to talk about what you would have to give up in order to do that thing. And so I don't know, it's like this balance of like all of it, yes, explore, the world is your oyster, but then also like what's most important, you know, like this pulling back and like connection, quiet, home, time for each other. I don't know.
Oh my God. So two things that came to mind as you were saying that, right? I'm saying like openness. Yes, yes. But like something that I actually, and again, I'm like, oh, I got to do all these things. That has made me like a profoundly oriented towards really tying my self-worth to productivity. Mm-hmm. Oopsie, that's kind of tough. Mm-hmm. That is like a really heavy burden to bear, I think, especially when you are learning how to be a parent.
And especially as an artist.
Oh,
right?
Sure.
Like we the world doesn't really recognize what we do
Yeah.
So we got to like work and look how busy we are and look at 100 studies we made and look at all the things we applied to. And we have to like provide all this proof of like productivity all the time.
Yeah, totally. And something I've actually been thinking a lot about this past year is slowness, just like actually what would it look like for me to truly slow down. Mm-hmm. And the reality of being a parent to a baby is like tummy time, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're down on the ground, you are not doing anything at all. And like, I even noticed certainly that I was doing that, but it's sort of like learning how to meditate when your like mind starts to wander and the list starts to form anyways. And it really became clear to me that like, oh, slowness actually needs to become like a practice, just as like my knitting practices, just as my community building practices. And I think a lot about, I love that sort of conversation you were talking about that you might have with your son about like, what a concept that like, actually what's really important to us is like going on a walk as a family. Mm-hmm. Like I love cooking. I love like, that's sort of my creative lever at the end of the day. And like, I have these dreams of like my son helping me with dinner. And in the house I grew up in, that was not happening. We didn't, you know, it was like, it wasn't necessarily like eat at the counter thing, but there are many nights that I wasn't eating dinner with my parents who were working late.
Right.
And there's something, right, it's like a value that I think I have, even though I don't quite know how to practice it yet. I really want to be slow, and I really, I love how you said, like bringing to bear to your son, like this is something we get to do when we're slow. Yeah. And if we make a different decision, and that's something that's the kind of parent I want to be, like a yes. And yeah. Also,
it's hard. It's a balance. It's,
gosh, totally.
I was reminded, have you read the book Rest is Resistance by Tricia Hersey?
No, but I clearly
you would love that. You would love it. But one of the things that's, as you were talking, I was reminded of that book because something that helped me as like a person prone to, you know, proving my self-worth through productivity. She kind of talks about in that book how rest is an action. Like you have to choose, you know, because I think in the back of my little pea brain, I'm like, I'm being lazy if I'm resting or I'm not doing anything or I'm, the point is, it's all a choice how we spend our time, how we spend our wild and precious life, right? And we can see rest and slowness and connection and going for a walk as the thing that we want to fill our time, not as like a non thing, you know?
I know. Yes, totally.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Yes, right. That's the thing. That is it. Right. It's not like getting you to the next thing. It is the thing itself.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. Okay, oh Katie, God, totally. We got... Yeah. We're getting so derailed. We got to talk about your art. We got to talk about Fiber Club. So many things. Did you like how when I was reading your bio, I was like, Fiber Club?
I mean, listen, it's been like Fiber Club has kind of been like the surprise and joy of
I kind of
life.
See those celebration emojis when I say Fiber Club. I was like, I hope she can feel those little emojis with the confetti coming out.
I feel that way too. I mean, I really feel that way too. It's become this really important part of my practice. I never really, you know, I'd really kind of thought about my studio practice, certainly based right now. Well, let me take a step back.
Okay, wait, describe your art. Describe your art.
Please.
What is your art practice?
Thank you.
What does it look like?
So right now, since 2019, it has been really sort of centered and focused in material exploration, particularly textiles and fiber. I spent a semester in grad school in Los Angeles, California, and it was there that I learned how to knit on a loom. And I got lost in sort of the garment district and came into contact with bulk elastic bra strapping.
That and is my, not what I thought you were going to say. That's awesome.
No, ma'am. The move of learning how to knit and coming upon this sort of like deliciously human, intimate, kind of sexy, mm-hmm. bodily, malleable material has been sort of like this grounding move in right now what is my studio practice. I knit these sort of forms that can be stretched, that can be stuffed, that can hang, that can sit. And it's sort of become this really important aspect of this visual language. Mm-hmm. Another interesting or rather important part of my childhood is I was like an athlete. I was a sporty girl and spent my high school years rowing, which like on its face is a pretty, you are doing the same thing over and over again. You are sort of, you're at the catch, which is the front of your stroke, and the release, which is the back of your stroke, over and over again, moving through water. And man, did that imprint something in me, because I am so drawn to repetitive processes. Mm-hmm. It's like something that my body chases and I feel very sort of oriented around. And certainly knitting, I mean, you're building loop by loop,
right?
But it's the same thing over and over again. So that has been another thing that I've really sort of taken with me, is this this really important aspect of the practice that is bodily and meditative. And then I sort of use that meditation to build shapes that point to the body abstractly. They behave like the body. That's how elastic bra strapping helps me get there. Like, it sags, it droops, you can stuff it. So I've been able to sort of amalgamate these things that are important to me into, a sculptural practice that I'm thinking about the body. And I will say, like, everything changed when I started trying to get pregnant, because I had two miscarriages and did not see those coming, and realized that for a very long time, the work, if you'd ask me, oh, what's your work about? I would say, like, they're about bodies, like abstract bodies, gesture. I really kept the work in this sort of general space. I'd been really resistant to sort of thinking about my own body and thinking about my own physical experience. And the miscarriage sort of like, it's like I jolted awake and realized that my body was experiencing things that I could think about materially through this language that I developed. But now could be way more specific, because the metaphors that I was exploring were things that like were literally embodied by me.
I find that often happens with artist parents, doing these interviews, is that the act of becoming a parent makes your own reality like so clear to you. And so, you know, it's like something that you can't ignore anymore. Like, you have to get personal. But then also there's this experience of feeling generally connected to, like, this, you know, the people who have come before, who have, like, given birth or who have brought a child into the world. Like, there's this, again, this, like, both and of, like,
oh,
suddenly I'm a part of this thing that's like so much bigger than me, but also my experience is so real and raw. And, you know, you're kind of like pinging back and forth in some of the ways that you were talking about with your art that I find interesting.
Oh yeah. And so I'm thinking about this a lot right now, because like the feeling like things are discrete, but actually they're part of maybe something that a system that never changes, or mm-hmm. not never changes, but sort of never stops. Mm. Like, think it's everything is like the infinity sign. Mm-hmm. And so, to your point of like becoming a mother in my own way, and that process was so felt so discreet, but like actually is totally mapped on this continuum of like every person who has become a mother, who thinks that they are a mother, who, however you have become
who
a mother.
Who has maternal characteristics.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. It is like we are all
We are gender inclusive in this conversation, obviously.
Because, and this mothering is not gendered. Mm-hmm. Like, it... Oh, God, now yeah. like, watch this tangent okay. happen. Yes, yes, right. But, and I guess the way I've been thinking a lot about the discrete versus the continuum is the miscarriage felt so specific and isolated. Mm. But it was through the miscarriages that I became pregnant with Sai, my son. And then it was like through the pregnancy and giving birth that I became a mother. Mm-hmm. And what my practice has been able to sort of show too is like the shapes and the forms that I thought I was making to talk about miscarriage. If you look at them in a different light, they could also be the shapes and forms of pregnancy. They can be the shapes and forms of motherhood. Like it's all the same and it's all different.
Yes.
But it's okay. all the same.
I'm sorry. I feel like I talk about this phrase all the time related to my work, but
yeah.
emergent strategy fractals.
Ooh.
This idea of the small build, like Adrienne Marie Brown talks about the formation of a fern, where a fern, if you look at one little microscopic inch of a fern, mm-hmm. it looks like a big fern.
So oh, it's like I love that.
The patterns in nature just like repeat and they build yep. on each other. And whether you're looking at something from, you know, an inch away or mm-hmm. a foot away or mm-hmm. a mile away, the patterns mm-hmm. remain the same. And like, I feel like yeah. that's exactly what you just described.
It literally is. And I am feeling like so much power and interest. Okay. Right. We were like, oop, we're not going to go there, but I, you know, and I, we'll talk about sort of our mutual love of community building, but mm-hmm. like this sort of continuum has made me feel like more present mm-hmm. in my experience and in being a person in the world. Like mm-hmm. the fractalness to me feels like so comforting
mm-hmm.
actually mm-hmm. and like so much more grounded mm-hmm. that like it's all there
mm-hmm.
all the time and like it all plots like it's all these little tiny points along this it just makes me feel like more open, more connected, more understanding of a bigger picture an ecosystem, an existence that I am both having very personal, discrete, again, experiences, but like they are mapped and shared.
Mm.
It's very comforting.
I love that you brought the word comfort into it because I don't think that's a term that I would have directly connected to that idea. And I think it's just a really important reminder to me. And one of the things that I was thinking of was when I'm seeing the patterns, like what draws me back to that perspective? And it's poetry, it's art.
Ooh.
It's
Ooh.
Like what can bring me comfort in the realization of where I'm positioned in the world, mm-hmm. the small or the many, right? Mm-hmm. I'm like, it's the artist, it's the mm-hmm. reminders, it's the poet, it's the writer, it's the mm-hmm. the, you know, the work that we do within ourselves to both mm-hmm. be grounded, to to connect with our breath,
mm-hmm.
but then to like join a protest or build a community.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what a, I know we both feel this way. Like, it's a real gift to be creative, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, something, regardless of what my son is interested in, like, I think my desperate wish for my child is that, like, he will be curious.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure he will.
He will be curious.
He is curious naturally, but I think, forgive me for speaking for you, but I feel like what you're saying is that you will be able to provide him an environment where his curiosity will not be squashed.
Oh boy, it better not. Like that,
you know,
at the end of this here life, like as I, that is like, that will be the measure of success.
Yes. Right?
Is like, the measure of success to me will be in the questions that he will ask and continue to ask. And it's funny, my husband is like very, he's like this like cute little cowboy from Wyoming, does really? Not talk a lot. Oh yeah, we could not be more different. And he's like, oh my God, like time is ticking until I'm going to be surrounded at the dinner table with questions like between me and my, and I am like chomping at the bit for this kid to start asking. I cannot wait for his first question. Like, I feel like I'm like sitting in the corner, like rubbing my hands together, being like, okay, kid, you're almost there. You're almost there. And I like, I cannot wait until he starts asking questions.
I can't wait for you to listen back to this interview in a few years and be like, what was I thinking? No, like, I totally understand what you mean. I think it's great. I say that as somebody who, one of my gripes with my kids that I actually was talking to them about it on Saturday. It's my six, almost 7 year old. We'll be in the car and everything. And I can't even get through the story without, you know, recognizing what a privilege it is to like have this tender voice in my ear. Yeah. But he will not address me without saying mommy, you know, so mommy, what do you think? Mommy, mommy. And he waits for me to like say, what Zeke? So it's just for, you know, it's just this like mommy, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, honey, I'm right next to you. You don't need to say my name every time.
Wow.
You can just ask me the question, you know, because I'm like, we're taking twice as long to like get to this. But then again, I realize what a douchey thing
No.
In the moment, like the stress of parenting, like you're just like, stop saying my name, just say
you know
question.
What that what that's making me think of. I was talking to someone I work with, and you know, love my son so much, not such a cuddler, like kind of not that into cuddling. He's like very busy, he likes to do his own thing. It's like he'll give me a little
age,
cuddle
yeah.
if he's very sleepy, but and then I have to be very jealous of the sleepy cuddles. But this gal I work with was saying how her daughter, who I think is about seven,
mm-hmm.
came out of the womb desperate to cuddle. And now at seven, this floored me. She said, my daughter says to me, mom, I just need to touch your arm.
Aww.
Mom, I'll feel okay if I can just touch your back.
Mm.
That like gave me a chill. And you know, my colleague was like, it can be really intense mm-hmm. and hard.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was thinking, sure, totally, just like mommy, that it's like there's a context and reality, all that, but like mom, I just need to touch your arm. What? Like I wish I was
like
that evolved.
Thing,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, to know what I needed.
And it's like that thing that overwhelms us is also the thing we like most desperately need,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Totally.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Artist Mother Podcast. I wanted to take a moment to share about a few opportunities for you, including two great open calls that we have right now at Kin House Gallery. Kin House is my brick and mortar gallery and artist residency in Fort Wayne, Indiana. We have an open call right now for a fiber-based show juried by the fabulous artist Cassie Arnold. Cassie is a true delight and an internationally recognized superstar fiber artist. She's been interviewed on the podcast before, so make sure you go back and check out her episode. For this open call, we invite submissions that reflect a range of work related to and including fiber-based mediums and materials. Submissions may range from traditional loom weavings to collaged or mixed media works. Submissions should include a fiber-based material or technique, innovative, unexpected, and exploratory submissions within the fiber category are encouraged. And all artists who submit to this call, not just accepted artists to the show, but all artists who submit, will be invited to a Fiber Friends Zoom hosted by Kinhouse co-directors myself, Kaylin Butine, and my co-director Dana Caldera, as well as our juror Cassie Arnold. On the Zoom, we're going to discuss our favorite contemporary fiber-based artworks, as well as facilitate discussion and connection for everyone there. If you're an artist who uses fiber-based materials or techniques, we would love to see your work. This call ends on May 4th, 2025. You can submit until midnight, and artists will be notified by May 30th, 2025. This exhibition will run from July 16th, 2025 through August 20th, 2025. And we will host an exhibition reception on Saturday, July 26th, 2025 at Kinhouse Gallery in Fort Wayne, Indiana. You can see more about this call by heading to the link in our show notes or to kinhouseart.com/fiber. Another opportunity we have open right now is for you to take over our gallery space and submit a proposal. Maybe you want to do a solo show, maybe you want to submit a two-person show or a small group show, or try your hand at curating a show. Our proposal open calls seeks to support you in any of these ventures. Exhibitions will be considered for our 2026 programming year and most likely given a spot during summer of 2026. This call closes on June 1st, 2025, so you will be given almost a full year to develop your idea. Selected artists or curators will receive from us, Kinhouse Gallery, communication and support leading up to the exhibition. You'll receive our installation support at the exhibition. You'll receive anywhere from between a 2 to 4 week use of our gallery space for your exhibition. You'll receive promotion and marketing of your artwork and your exhibition on our platforms. You will receive a $250 stipend for your use for your exhibition preparations at your own discretion. And we will also professionally document your exhibition, edit those photos for you, and give you the rights to those photos so you can use them forever. Even if we don't choose your proposal, I just want to say that getting your work in front of us is a great way to help us get to know you, and so we can keep you in mind for future opportunities. We actually have a group show happening in summer 2025 called Color Pool that was all people that submitted to previous shows in 2024. We didn't select their work for those past shows that they submitted to, but we loved their work so much that we curated a different show with their work in mind. So it really pays to continue to submit so we can see your work, and we really do go back and look and keep artists in mind. We try to give as many people opportunities as we can in our space. So please check out this open call for 2026 solo, small group, or curatorial proposals at the link in our show notes of this episode. And you can also bookmark our website, kinhouseart.com/calls. That is the page where we continually keep our open calls shared and up to date. And you can check it out periodically to see what opportunities we have where we're just out there trying to support the artists we love as artists ourselves. Thanks so much again for listening to this episode of the Artist Mother Podcast and for your support of my other branch of art world love, Kinhouse Gallery and Residency. Okay, Katie, let's talk about Fiber Club. Tell me.
Let's.
Tell me the origin story. Well, let's start with the origin story because we have lots to connect about the nuts and bolts of how to build community, what's hard about it, what's great about it. So give us like a play-by-play of the early stages.
Sure. So the year was 2020, heard of it? and I was finishing my grad program in Syracuse, New York. And then, I don't know, just like this thing happened and the bottom fell out of my program. You know, I just remember.
Small thing.
You know what's actually crazy? So I was just harping on how important March 13th is. That was March 13th, 2020 is the day my program closed.
Well, when you said March 13th, I was like, isn't that the COVID day? Or maybe it was like the 16th or something.
I think for us, actually, it might have, because I think the 13th, like I remember this so clearly because I was getting ready for my thesis show and the school shut down. And I'm pretty sure it was the 13th. Like, right. If you had told me March 13th, 2020, like 4 years from now, you're going to be lying in a hospital bed with a new friend.
It was Friday the 13th in 2020.
Yes.
I had to look it up because.
Yes.
We had a big opening. My first like artist mother painting at night opening was the previous Friday, the 6th. Oh. And everybody at the opening was like, have you heard about this thing? Like we heard, is it safe to travel? We don't know. Yep. And, you know, and then like 3 days later, because I think the like orders started to happen like on that Tuesday or Wednesday, and then institutions started to like make the decisions like shortly after.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was crazy fast all that happened.
It happened really fast. March 6th, we had, so the way Syracuse used to do their thesis shows is there would be one exhibit in New York City and then one like a bigger sort of more expanded version of the work you wanted to show at the on-campus museum. So March 6, 2020 was what we had called the March 6th show. So I was in New York City with my cohort. We had an opening on Canal Street. I lived in New York City for about 7-8 years before that. It was like it was such a joyous opening. I had friends from all walks of life coming through to see some of the work. But you know, the conversation was like, oh, we got to go to Chinatown to support these businesses who are getting a bunch of flack from the mishigas that's going around.
Oh my
gosh. So like
I
went and got noodles after the opening and I was feeling so great and excited about the next iteration of my thesis show. And so that's, I guess this is all to say, like to ground set Fiber Club in like, I was carrying like this loss.
Mm.
Grad school changed my life. Mm-hmm. It was so important for me I took a bunch of years off between my BFA and MFA and really came, I never expected to get an MFA after graduating with the BFA, but like my hunger and desire to be in the studio and to make and connect with artists in a specific way brought me back. And it was a magical couple of years. I met my mentor in Clark, who is an amazing fiber artist, who lives in Syracuse, New York. I mean, that's where I met my husband. Mm-hmm. That's where I found my language, my material language. That's where like I looked in the mirror and was like, no, girl, you're an art. Like, this is it. You're an artist. This is your life. So with profound sadness, did I watch sort of this culminating moment disappear?
Mm.
And that was what I was carrying with me when eventually I relocated to Detroit in 2021. I was kind of like desperate to recreate something like a cohort mentality that I had lost and lost. It wasn't like the slow sort of like moving away or like camp ending, like you say goodbye to your friend.
Yeah.
It was a jolt. It was so distressing. And so Fiber Club came from this desire to be back in conversation and not to feel isolated. So again, it's like the COVID of it all, the losing of it all. And it's so crazy to think about this now, Kaylin. Like I sent an email to about 30 people. So I moved back Because I'd gone to college in Michigan. I moved back to the state and to Detroit in January of 2021. A year and a half later, so let's say summer 2022,
okay,
I send an email with like a Google form attached, I think, to some people I knew personally in the area who were fiber artists, some people who I'd only heard of, friends of friends, literally saying like, hey, would you be interested in like a club of sorts? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, so more questions than answered, but just like, would you want to do this? What kind of things would you be interested in doing? What days of the week might work for you? Like a real sort of Hail Mary to about 30 people. And another really important thing that happened is I had had a conversation with a woman who used to run a small nonprofit in the city. You know, we had, a friend had connected us as a way of me sort of making my rounds and introducing myself to creative people in the city. And she had turned to me and said, like, do you have a creative community here? Like, we have space if you'd maybe want to meet. I was like,
Resource sharing.
I mean,
the lifeblood.
The literal lifeblood. So October 4th, 2022, I think it was a Tuesday? I think it was a Tuesday. I called the first fiber club meeting. There is a photo online to commemorate said meeting. There are maybe 25 to 30 of us there.
Which is amazing.
Which was so amazing and surprising.
What did you do on the first meeting? Did you? Because I think this is a great, so many people have the loneliness and the longing that you described.
Yeah.
But they're like, I don't have the perfect plan. I don't have the, so like, hear Katie when she says she literally just sent a random tentative email to a few people. She found a space.
Yes.
And what was the plan for the first meeting? Did you have anxiety? Were you, you know, what were, like, how did you manage expectations, both your own and the group?
Ooh, such great questions. Well, I remember the first thing we did was like we went around and introduced ourselves. Like to me, like we sort of ground set on like who is here. And it might have been like why you're here. I was part of this residency at the Chautauqua School of Art a couple years ago. And the executive director at the time, Sharon Loudon, would always pose this question that I have now borrowed, which is like introducing yourself and saying what you need and what you have. Hello, like what a way. And I'm pretty sure that's kind of how we started of like, what do you need, but what do you have to give? That's a way to ground set. Like we're kind of all building the car together as we're driving.
Yes.
And I really felt very, you know, it's funny, I wasn't even a parent then, a mother, but it did feel pretty clear to me that if anything was going to happen, it was going to be like Fiber Club isn't mine, right? Like it isn't mine. It is a community. It is a network. And like, I really truly feel and want to behave like a conduit. And that's honestly when I'm feeling the best about myself. Like if you are like, I need your help, I basically am like fainting inside because I love to feel helpful. And my favorite thing, Kaylin, in the whole world is to talk to someone and be like, oh, you got to talk to this person.
Yes.
I don't need to be in the room to hear that conversation, but like I want to put two people together who I think need
matchmaker.
Oh my, I would have crushed as a matchmaker back in the day. Killed it. Crushed it. That is some of the best moments in my life are when I am like, oh my God, you need to talk to this person. And like living a life in which I am coming into contact with so many people that then I can like put in my brain and then make matches when I can. And that is, and that's really what Fiber Club has sort of become, I think, is this like this space for people to meet, to collaborate, to share resources. So what we started with in Fiber Club has essentially retained this structure is we always do announcements. And that is a time to, like, we want you to come with, like, how the network can support you. So if people have workshops they're giving, opportunities they want to share, shows they want you to come to, like, there is a ton of resource sharing up at the top of each meeting. And then, like, everyone's favorite part is what we affectionately call show and tell, which is basically a choose your own adventure, critique light, sort of whatever you need. Show and tell has been used to practice artist talks. It's been used to practice teaching something. It's been used to really just, like, show some work. It's been used. I used it a couple years ago as, like, a two-person show was coming together to get some feedback on things that were resonating. Super helpful. But I mean, and it, Kaylin, it is so sweet. Like, someone will be showing their work, and, like, you literally hear, like, ooh, ah, like, there are oohs and ahs from the crowd. It's just, like, a bunch of people who are so present.
Well, I'll use this opportunity to shout out our mutual friend, Lisa Alberts, who connected us, because I have been waiting for a moment to, like, drop Lisa's name. This is the moment, because what I have to say to you is that every time Lisa makes a Fiber Club meeting, on the drive home, as you know, Lisa and I are notorious for gushing about where we just were when we're driving home from a cool event with each other. Long live the WhatsApp audio note. But she will be driving home and sending my little group of Fiber besties, Cassie Arnold, Lisa Alberts, and Steph Zito, and me, every Fiber Club she gets on, and she's like, you guys, I just had the best, except she doesn't talk like that because Lisa's way cooler than I am. She's like, okay, people, this amazing experience just happened. I'm so grateful to be in this moment in this community. Thank God for Meg. Thank God for Katie. Thank God for you, my little. And she would also not say thank God. Lisa, I'm sorry, I'm getting this all wrong, but she just gushes. She's like, and she, it was funny. She actually talked about, because you had a meeting last week, I think.
Sure did.
And she was just the quilts that this woman was making, and she was sharing about. And she talked about how the community was responding to the quilts. Like, she talked about the woman sharing the quilts and the artist, but she was also like, and everybody was just so supportive and nurturing. And she was like, I just feel so grateful for this big circle I'm part of, and then this little soft circle that I get to share. These repeating themes in our conversation are so interesting. So shout out to Lisa, and also just affirming that experience of, like, community with people who want to be seen and validated and known, but also want to support and uplift and cheer each other on. That's why I love women artists, like, you know, and it's, and I don't mean that in a specifically gendered way, but I think there is something so feminine about championing each other in, like, these soft, generous ways.
Yeah. And here's the deal. We are in this, the quote unquote art world actually does not function in this way.
No, come on, people.
It is not a place of abundance. And listen, I'm like a pretty, I have really normative aspirations in a lot of ways. Like, I want to be great. I want to be a great artist.
Me too.
Like, I really want to be good. And I understand being good is, like, making more work, making it better, but then also practicing in public, right? Listen, there are not a ton of opportunities really anywhere. It's hard to find them. And this feels very much like a resource-starved environment. And guess how people behave in resource-starved environments? Badly.
Yes.
They behave badly. I behave badly. Like, you know, everyone's done it. Like, I can't believe so-and-so got that thing. I can't believe so-and-so got that thing. It's ugly shit. And guess what? It happens. Everyone does it. Fiber Club has been why it's been the surprise of my life is because it actually is showing me that operating from a place of abundance and being a place where things can happen and connections can be made is the antidote to resource scarcity. And it's sort of like, oh my God, like when you go to the gym after not going to the gym, and you're like, God damn it, I feel really good. Like the way I operate in Fiber Club is like, I, with Meg Morley, who like, I actually like, let's put a pin in Meg Morley because yes, she's very important to all of this. Pin in Meg Morley. We're going to come back.
Pin noted.
So I am sort of co-leading Fiber Club and really operating more as like an administrator mm-hmm. than necessarily a participant. A lot of the collaborations we have had, opportunities we've created, like I'm sort of bringing them in. Meg and I are putting them out there. And then this delicious network is like either applying to them or running with them. Mm-hmm. And ready for this? Mm-hmm. I have almost never been busier in my personal practice because that activity that I am creating and holding literally does do the same thing as going to the gym. Like it comes back, it boomerangs.
Yes.
So being a person who is creating space for opportunity to come in has paid off for me and my individual practice.
Yes.
It works. Mm-hmm. Creating space for other people works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can vouch for that too. I mean, so many of the opportunities I've had as an individual artist are products, if you will, of the labor that I've put in to like try to make artist mothers visible and feel known and loved yeah. and cared for. Like it does come back. And yeah, I think it is like this fight against scarcity mindset of saying like, ooh, I've gotta keep it for myself. I've gotta like, you know, put the boundaries up. And I mean, I think this is like, maybe I'm getting a little too deep here, but I think this is one of the things I struggle with the most is like not overextending myself. You know, not, because I think especially as women, like we're conditioned to overextend ourselves. We got to serve, we got to love, we got to be the conduit. But then as an artist, like I'm like, I want to grow. I want to mm-hmm. create space for doing the deep work that only mm-hmm. I can do, mm-hmm. you know?
Yep.
But then I'm like, but part of my deep work is this conduit, yep. is this community yep. building, is, and it's, sometimes it's hard to like hold both of those things like in the sure. air at the same time, you know? And remember that like I'm never gonna achieve this like perfect balance of like doing all this work, and that's okay, but my intentions, you know, are to make the work that only I can make, and that looks like many different things.
Oh yep, you know? Yeah. And you know, right, I said I was putting a pin in
yes Meg
artist Meg Morley. Let's take the pin out because I also think right. So I cannot tell you how much I connect to like these sort of like, it's swirling, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's the studio practice, there's Fiber Club. I have a full-time job. I just had a baby. Mm-hmm. I have two very badly behaved dogs who require my attention. Fiber Club would have ceased to exist without Meg Morley. When mm-hmm. In the sense that like, I got pregnant. I was having this baby. I totally underestimated how freaking out of it I was going to be mm-hmm. for a couple months. Mm-hmm. Like, ha ha, that I was going to be, that I was going to like show up to the first Fiber Club. Like, there was one point, Kaylin, where I was like, well, if I have Psy on the 13th, and okay, maybe I won't go to the Fiber Club meeting in March, but like in April. Like,
yeah. Surely
I'll be ready to do that. Let's talk about Meg Morley. She is one of the 30 people who showed up on October 4th, 2022. We did not know each other. We did not know each other. I mean, I feel like so much animosity sometimes towards like the internet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, is this even working? Somehow she found some post of mine, some something. We did not know each other. And she showed up at the first meeting and has been this like really steady presence and this person who, when I have asked for help, has raised her hand and said, I would like to help.
Mm.
To the point where Fiber Club is a co-situation.
Mm-hmm.
We are co-direct completely.
Mm-hmm.
He is my partner in this thing through and through. Over the past, you know, couple years now, I've been sort of amazed at how, I mean, she's just like shown up in this way that has really been baffling to me, just in the sense of like, oh, wow, someone can be this generous.
Mm-hmm.
And something that I have learned about myself, or at least has been really underscored, is like, you know how we do 150 things as mothers and parents and artists, and we have to trust people.
Mm. Well, I was just going to say, you asked for help first. Step one.
I know. I asked for help. I got it. But then it was so much more than that. It became like collaboration. Mm-hmm. Now, like, she leads, I follow. But I think something that I really learned about myself and about like the skeleton key to this existence, this creative existence that's very complicated, but one that I feel very dedicated to, is like, I got to have trust.
Mm-hmm.
And truly, if it wasn't for Meg, Fiber Club would cease to exist. It would cease to exist. Mm-hmm. This woman has like taken this seed that I planted and like
nourished dumped it.
Yeah. Water on it. Dumped water on it.
Yeah.
And like dumped in the most like a progressive, expansive way.
Mm.
And I'm like, I had no idea what becoming a mother would take out of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not have to think twice.
Mm.
And frankly, in the time that I was on maternity leave, like some of the most exciting things started to percolate.
Mm-hmm.
And she was there. She shepherded it. Like it was, she did it.
Well, I think too, I love that the way you're describing this about you planting the seeds and other people coming along and nurturing the seeds, but then certainly, you know, Fiber Club is now this like garden of like crazy plants and vegetables.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
just the tendrils are like expanding everywhere, you know. I think like remaining rooted in your own intention for the place to grow on its own, to not be Katie has to control the growth, has to control the agenda. Release, like there's a podcast with Liz Gilbert that my friend Steph Zito sent me an interview, and she talks about this idea of no cherished outcomes. We can't put this cherished outcome like perspective on everything. We have to hold it loosely, you know.
Oh yeah.
But how do you hold something that you care about so much, but keep your grasp loose enough that it can live its own life, you know?
Oh, it's hard. And sometimes it is like not cute on my part. Like if, again, let's go back to like what scarcity mindset does. Is it like makes you think certain things are precious and should be yours?
Mm-hmm.
If you think like, there have been some moments where I've been like, but Fiber Club might be my project. It's like the thoughts, like there is still this world in which we live in that sort of shows us that claiming things get you things.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that I am in a perpetual state of trying to unlearn that. Mm-hmm. And it is still very much present sometimes. Yep. Again, if you want things, if you want to be great, if you want opportunity, if you want, and you look out into the world and you see people who like have things that seem interesting to you, like, I think your mind goes to a place of like, oh, I have to talk about this way. I have to show up this way. I have to. And all of those things run completely counter to what it takes to nourish something like Fiber Club.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, Kaylin, at the end of the day, it is such an important gut check for me to be like, no. The priority is, let me step back. There's 30 people showed up on October 4th, 2022. I emailed, 25, 30 people. Our email list is like 600 people now.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
Like there are 600 people who are curious about what Fiber Club is doing, who have participated in what Fiber Club is doing, who really could like use a community, a platform, opportunity. Like that's really important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And just this past week, I had a show open in Traverse City and I got an email to the Fiber Club email from a member. The subject line was gratitude. And in it said, I really want to let you two know how grateful I am. I feel like my CV is filled with things that Fiber Club has facilitated.
Mm. And what a gift.
So meaningful. And honestly, Kaylin, the thing I felt to my core was that email. The opening was amazing. It was so profound to see some of this work contextualized together. The thing that I am really still thinking about was the email with the subject line, gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
Like that made me feel so proud and happy.
Mm.
And so this is sort of back to the point of like, yes, I am a fiber artist who makes fiber sculpture, but I am also a community maker and builder. Mm-hmm. And like those two things feel like they are both part of the same puzzle.
Yeah, they're that's capital A artist, Katie, Katie, I'm gonna wrap us up because I don't know why I never want this conversation to end, but as I mentioned before, my husband edits these for free, and so I don't want to kill him.
Yeah, seriously. No, please.
I can't wait for continued conversation and connection around this because I find the community building work can echo so many of the things that you shared, like the gratitude and the deep like sense of this is my work as an artist, but also burnout is real, I think, in community building.
Real. So. It's so real. It's so, boy, is it real. I know. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. Okay. Final five. Ready? Who's your biggest art crush?
Okay. I'm going to say there are two people who really come to mind. One is this insane artist. Her name is Truly Hall. She is a sculptor in LA. She creates these like wacky, insane worlds that are filled with sculpture and video. They're sexy, they're disturbing, they're strange. In 2019, I got to meet her at one of her shows and was just like, damn.
I wish I made that.
I wish I made this world. Mm-hmm. And then there's a piece by the artist Janine Antoni called Loving Care, where she dumps her head in hair dye and mops the floor of a gallery space. And like, there's something just so guttural and badass and like visceral about that action where I'm just like, if all of my work could like hit that way, I'd be really thrilled.
Mm.
It's an amazing piece.
What is your favorite place to travel or a dream trip you'd like to go on?
Right now, like my dream travel that I've been so lucky to be able to do since 2019 is go to LA. I have a relationship with Los Angeles, and like I go to get more material. I go to see great art. My best friend from college lives there. And I love visiting places where I don't feel like a visitor.
Mm-hmm.
Like I feel like it's lived in. And for me, like I've always considered myself to be like an East Coast girl. So like living in LA for a semester and loving it, like actually changed something deeply inside of me in terms of my self-perception. So getting to LA is always sort of like a treat.
I love that. Tell me a film or a book that has been a big inspiration to you.
So I have been a bit on a memoir kick these days and just finished Sally Mann's autobiography, Hold Still. And my recommendation is to, first of all, it's like, you're just like, this is just your family. It's a crazy sweeping story. Mm-hmm. But the chapter called Hold Still is sort of about her breaking down the genesis of a photograph.
Mm-hmm.
And just like as a person who makes things, like it was sort of so affirming to be like, right, like all these tiny decisions go into the things that we make. I would just highly recommend, it's, I think maybe it's chapter 8 in the book. Anyone out there, like just read the chapter. Mm-hmm. It's really, it's a remarkable.
I'm going to have to go back and read the chapter because I've read the book, but yeah.
So I would say go back and read Hold Still, the chapter Hold Still and Hold Still.
Ooh, and even if you're not someone who thinks photography memoir, it's an artist's mother memoir, really. And
100%. Yeah. And so much of the, I mean, this, so like to take a tiny little Sally Mann sidetrack,
mm-hmm.
she got in some hot water in mm-hmm. the 90s because of the way she was photographing her children.
Yep.
So in a sense, too, she's also really, right, thinking about parenthood and the implications of sort of her passion and her practice
yeah.
and what the outside world is saying about her parenting style, but actually like how she intended the work to sit. It's
so good.
Totally. Read it.
Actually connecting LA and Sally Mann, I was in LA. I tagged along. My husband had a work trip there in 2021. I think saw a big exhibition of hers at the Getty.
Oh, get out of
it
here.
It was amazing.
Oh, God. Yeah. Oh,
I love the Getty. Oh,
my God. Like
one
so
of the
dreamy.
Best places on earth.
Totally.
Okay. Favorite meal?
Okay. I'm like a sauce girl.
Mm.
Like anything that I could like cover in sauce.
Any sauce preference?
No, because Kaylin, it's all about all the sauces. Like, should you go out with me and like I get, say, a chicken finger, this is going to be what I say. Can you give me all the sauces? And the waiter or waitress will be like, you mean all the sauces? And I'm like, empty out the cabinet.
Well, I actually was out to dinner with you recently and you called me out. I ordered, so I like barbecue sauce with my french fries. And you
that's
were
right.
like, you like heard the
that's
order
right.
and you like
that's right.
pointed,
that's right.
you know, I don't remember what you did, but you were like,
that's exactly
that's my
right.
girl, that the sauce.
No, I
with
was
the fries.
Like, oh, interesting. I see this game and I respect it.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. So I would say just anything saucy.
Love it. Okay. And I always like to close by letting folks give a shout out to someone who is a big supporter of your work that you just want to share about.
You know, I'm glad we spent some time talking about Meg Morley because like she is really the reason why I can do a lot of things, but so is my husband.
Mm-hmm.
I met this guy in grad school. So we got to like build a relationship around like making art and loving art and seeing art. Mm-hmm. He gives a mean like I trust him implicitly. Like I think he has really good taste. So he gives a mean critique and then like he's just become this like delicious dad. And like I get to go and do my thing and he is like, go do your thing.
Mm.
Go do it. Like, go do your thing. Like, holy shit.
Yep.
I feel so lucky. I give him so much hell and complain and complain and complain. Man, he is crushing it as a dad. And he has just like, he's kind of just like, God bless, go forth, do your thing. And like, I feel so lucky, 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 lucky. So, and he's an amazing artist. He's a ceramicist. His name is Drew Davis and is just so talented in his own right. And like, just lets me do it.
I'm so lucky.
Yeah. Big fan.
Shout out to Megan Drew. Thanks for supporting Katie. Okay. And where can folks find you, Katie? Where can they find Fiber Club if they want to connect to Fiber Club? Tell us the website, Instagram. What are all the things?
Yeah. So if anyone is out there and wants to be part of Fiber Club, you don't have to even make fiber-based work and you don't even have to live in Detroit. Just letting you know, join our mailing list. We always circulate opportunities through like this really amazing Substack that Meg puts together every month. www.fiberclubdetroit.org is our website. You can also find us on Instagram. Follow us. Get in touch. Seriously, if like you want, all we want to do is collaborate, and like more is more. So if you're feeling jazzed about our work and like think we should partner, we want to hear from you. Also, what I say to anyone who ever joins a meeting is like, you're right on time. Like, like come on in, the water's warm. I'm at Katie Shulman on Instagram, and same thing website wise. And also just like want to hear from anyone. I just, again, right, Kaylin, it's like more is
connection.
More. Like,
yeah.
Let's do it. Yes. So sort of, find me.
Okay, Katie, thank you for doing this amazing work for community building. I know from many friends in Detroit that it's such a meaningful practice. So, and thank you for taking the time to do this interview.
Oh my God, Kaylin, thanks. Thanks for having me. And I can't wait for our next like saucy adventure.
Me too. The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.